The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
I think there's two things we can apply from fake drafts, fantasy drafts, coronavirus, nothing to do drafts, and real NFL drafts across the board. Always take the quarterback, and we always value, even overvalue, the young and unproven. The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation, 888-729-3776. I'll be taking your phone calls throughout the day. It's an open forum on what Black Lives Matter means, what progress means. What are we signing up for, or are we just virtue signaling from corporate to individuals? How much is real? How much is sincere? And how much is for the press release and the likes? Only way to answer that is by answering the question. That's all coming up today here on the Will Cain Show, and it's time for some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Up on ESPN.com, they did something fun. I think it was fun, and I think it's because there's nothing else going on in sports. Well, I mean, outside of, you know, racial tension and protest and progress, perhaps. Nothing much going on in terms of on-field play. And of course, it's because we haven't done anything for 3 months with stay-at-home orders to shut down not just sports, but our economy as well. Quick side note, if there is not a coronavirus outbreak in about 2 weeks, if these protests with people coming close together in every city across this nation, very tightly packed, yes, in outdoor situations, and often with masks, often without masks, but if there is not a coronavirus outbreak, I am going to become very cynical. That's just the truth. And it will be very well earned. There are people who had to say goodbye to loved ones on Zoom funerals. And there are jobless to the tune of almost 40 million in the United States. If there is not a coronavirus outbreak, after doing exactly what we were supposed to not do, I am going to be more than cynical and skeptical. And I think we all should. But back to fun in sports. When there is coronavirus, pandemic, quarantine, stay-at-home orders, you got to find new ways to do sports. So up on ESPN.com, they redrafted the league. They said, okay, local beat writer, you represent your team. 4 rounds, go. Let's see who drafts who ends up with the best squad, and who goes first. For what it's worth, this is what the top of the draft looks like. It's based upon the draft order from 2020. With the first overall pick, the Cincinnati Bengals select Patrick Mahomes. With the second pick, the Washington Redskins select Russell Wilson. Lamar Jackson goes third to the Detroit Lions. Deshaun Watson fourth to the New York Giants. Nuno would be hyped about that. Aaron Donald went fifth to the Miami Dolphins. The Chargers took offensive tackle Ronnie Stanley. The Carolina Panthers took defensive end Joey Bosa. At eighth, the Cardinals selected Drew Brees. At ninth, the Jags took Dak Prescott. And at tenth, the Browns took Nick Bosa. Now, a couple of notes. Three, in fact. Number one, well, Dak Prescott went higher than a lot of you thought he would, didn't he? Ninth, approximately two picks before the New York Jets took Carson Wentz, 11th overall. Dak Prescott was the sixth quarterback taken among this fictional pool of draft quarterbacks eligible to the Jacksonville Jaguars, representing, I think, exactly what I think is accurate about what kind of quarterback Dak Prescott is. Number two, I saw a lot of people on Twitter, people I follow, football nerds, got really mad about this. ESPN, so stupid. What is this? Why would you take Aaron Donald fifth, and even more ridiculously, Ronnie Stanley sixth, and even Joey Bosa seventh? There is no non-quarterback more valuable than whoever you think the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth best quarterback is in the league. And to that, I'd say, lighten up, pal. You're right. Quarterbacks are more valuable. But this was an exercise in a four-round draft, and it wouldn't be stupid for one of these guys to go, just like in your fantasy draft, well, anybody that spends a first-round pick on a quarterback's not going to be in round two or three, so I can maybe get value there. For example, drafting for the Miami Dolphins, Aaron Donald went fifth overall. And the writer for the Dolphins draft, I believe, got Kirk Cousins in the third round. Now, would I rather have Prescott or Wentz or Rodgers or Brady than Cousins? Yes, I would. But you got to admit, that's a little bit of value there. The point is, it's a game. It's not real NFL. They were looking about, if I pass on it in this round, what can I get in the next round? Just like you do in your fantasy drafts. But number three, which I think is most interesting and probably most applicable to the real life, is you should see how many 2020 NFL draft picks went in this. Now remember, this is NFL teams drafting four deep, four rounds deep. And I gotta tell you, Jedrick Wills, Jeffrey Okuda, C.D. Lamb, Henry Ruggs, across the board, guys drafted in 2020 were drafted all over this thing, including Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, who went in the first round. Herbert went in the second round. Tua was drafted. And what I think fascinating about that is it reveals, I think, a really strong bias that we have. Constantly applicable. We love upside. We love hope. We love potential more than what we know. I think CeeDee Lamb is going to be great. I'm so excited the Cowboys got him in a draft full of other guys who haven't yet played in the NFL. But if you're drafting among everybody in the league, everybody who's already, in most cases, proven themselves, and by the way, contracts were totally thrown out in this draft. They were meaningless. You can't keep going back to the well on the draft because we know it has, at best, a 50-50 hit proposition versus proven players in the NFL. And these are riders that cover their teams. They presumably know something about these statistics. It just shows, man, we love upside and potential and youth and unproven players. It's boring to select somebody that's, you know, not just above average, but maybe 75% above most players in the league. If you don't get one of the top guys, go to the draft well. It's something that we always do. I think it's a constant bias everywhere you go. It's pretty fun, this draft. You can go check it out at ESPN.com. That's Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Let me go to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line where I have Tanner in Pennsylvania. What's up, Tanner? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Will. I just want to let you know I've been listening to your show since you started on it, and at first I didn't like you. So that one rejoin you have where you say people tend to not listen to you like you, and then after a while, you know, kind of come around to us, and, you know, I've loved the show ever since. But honestly,
oh, man.
Bubba's rejoin music is the best in the industry, like hands down. So I look forward to it every
yes.
day. T.I. is my favorite caller. I just wanted to give you a rundown of the show, of, like, what I've really enjoyed. I love your takes. I love how you're contrarian at times. And my best advice for you moving forward, never let Glickman on your new show, whatever it is. I don't know what it's going to be.
Yes, double yes.
Away from it.
All right, Tanner, I appreciate the call.
This guy knows.
I appreciate you listening. I appreciate the life cycle of our relationship, which, as I've said many times, is the life cycle of everyone's relationship with me, whether from afar, meaning through some kind of media mechanism, or through up close, like my family and friends. It goes from, yeah, I hate that guy too. He's my favorite. So it does give me pause. I announced today that the Will Cain Show will end at the end of June to start over again somewhere else, which I'll be announcing towards the end of this month as I hang out with you over the next 3 weeks, because I know damn well that everybody's going to hate me to start. And then I hope, if given a little time, they will become just like you, Tanner. Let me go, if I can, to Chris in North Carolina. What's up, Chris? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, I'm a first-time caller, and I got to tell you, I listen locally. I got three things real quick. I listen locally here in Raleigh, and honestly, in the last 4 months, you're the only state, the only one I listen to anymore, because you let people speak their mind and don't judge them based on what they say. Secondarily, the other topic, no one deserves to die. Despite their, even with their history, including David Dorn, who we're forgetting about. And finally, as a father, the biggest challenge I have in today's society is how to address my kids. And I've taught my children not to worry about other people's opinion, because it doesn't matter what they think of you. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and determine if you're a good human. And I think the hardest thing to do now is know that my grown boys turning into men, two of them right now, three of my three, have the biggest struggle I've ever seen in this country, and I'm almost 50.
I lost Chris there.
I would say this. I don't want to end necessarily on a heavy note, but I'm going to for this segment. We're going to break down Major League Baseball in just a moment. I would say two things. I am concerned. I would have said to Chris, you got to teach your boys to be men and teach them the right lessons, but I am unconvinced that this world is a place right now that values the same things I do. Actions over words, integrity over posts, principles over what's popular. I'm unconvinced that all of it adds up to, you know, coming out in the wash, as my friends and I used to say, when you pay for each other's meals. It'll all come out in the wash, or karma will play its role. I'm unconvinced of any of that. All I'm convinced of is if it's the right thing to do, then you do it because it's the right thing to do, period. Even if it ends up putting you in a worse position. And number two, I appreciate everybody and what they love about this show. I truly do. And I'll keep taking your calls, and I do want to hear from you. I'm not going to lie. It does feel good. But also, there's something else. There's something more important to say, and that is this. The theme that I hear is this. This show is a place that's an open forum to go back and forth, and people of disagreement, and in sports and ball busting and bringing us all together. And, you know, I may not be on ESPN in a month, and I can't tell you. That's going to be an easy thing to find, because I actually think it's a diminishing space in this world. But I hope you seek it out. I hope you find it. I hope you reward it. I hope for you and for that media, because, man, it is what we need so bad. So bad. I'm talking about something that's going extinct. That's what's going extinct. I know that's what we have here. We'll continue to have it, okay? And you hope you can continue to find it. Coming up, let's figure out if Major League Baseball is going to find its way back. I had a great conversation with our Major League Baseball writer, Jesse Rogers, a few weeks ago about management versus players, about salaries versus revenue. We had a little debate I thought was really good. Now the players and the owners are going back and forth again. Let's sort it out. Coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio.
Kevin in North Carolina.
Will, you are and have always been absolutely right on Dak being better than Wentz. I used to be a doubter, but as always, you're correct. That's okay. Because you have a monopoly on the truth.
Thank you.
More from Will Cain coming up.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically, all on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Right now, with the sides entrenched like they are, a path exists. Neither side right now, however, is willing to acknowledge that path.
I bet the family farm on no baseball this year.
Major League Baseball over here with the players over here, and it's a big old staring contest.
I think there's no doubt that there are some owners who would rather not play at all.
The baseball players are looking at getting no money or very, very, very reduced because they haven't played a single game yet. They have not had a single ticket sale.
Is there a path for Major League Baseball players to actually win in this showdown with Major League Baseball player or Major League Baseball owners? I don't see one. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. To help answer that, let's talk to Jesse Rogers, ESPN's Major League Baseball reporter, who's on the show Pennzoil Performance on. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. What's up, Jesse?
Good afternoon. You mentioned, can anybody win in this scenario? I don't think the players can win. I don't think the owners can win. There are no winners. All we can hope for is a short baseball season where both sides kind of go to their corner, play this thing out, play nice, and hopefully we can get some good competition out of this if they can come to some sort of agreement, because so far nothing's working. There is no middle ground to be had, Will. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about why that is, Jesse. To me, from what I gather, The owners think, and they may be correct, that the deal they agreed to in March with the players means they can unilaterally say prorated salaries for defined number of games, go. And they get to pick the number of games for those prorated salaries, right? So their fallback seems to be about 48 games. That's their floor. And the players, of course, want as many games as they can get to get more of their prorated salary. But the owners, who are losing money on a per-game basis, don't want to go much higher. So it seems to me, in the end, the owners can just go, we have an agreement. It's going to be 48 games. That's the minimum losses for us. Let's do it.
Well, players can say, too bad. We're not showing up, right? I mean, ultimately, they do hold the ball, so to speak, in this scenario. I mean, they probably would show up. There's the other option of taking this thing in front of an arbitrator and saying the baseball didn't negotiate in good faith, because in that agreement, and I've seen it, there's also a clause that says they'll play as many games as possible. Pretty ambiguous clause. So they could take this in front of an arbitrator. They could refuse to show up. They could show up, and Will, this is the most likely scenario. They could show up really unhappy, not sign off on anything that the owners want to do to get some publicity out of this game, miking players, expanded postseason. And here's the other thing I think is going to be a huge part of this thing if they're forced to play a shorter schedule, injuries. Can you imagine a 45, 50-game schedule? Mike Trout pulls a hammy and John Lester's shoulder hurts. Are we ever going to see those players again? And I've talked to players. They're not going to hold it against their teammates if they sit out. And remember, they're going to still get paid, but they'll be paid on the injured list. No one's going to come close to risking their future for a shortened season that they're unhappy about in the first place. So that's going to be a topic as well.
Let's lay out the owners, Jesse's incentive is to have as few games as possible, right? Because of, if we are to believe the numbers that Jeff Passan laid out last week, ESPN Major League Baseball Insider, the owners would lose somewhere around $650,000 per game. So their incentive is fewer games, right?
Yes, and on one level, I certainly believe them. Maybe I'm being naive. If they could make more money playing more games, you know they'd be advocating more games. So I do believe them.
So they want fewer games. I know you're not Jeff, and I know Jeff's not on the phone right now, but I wanted to ask you this because I looked back at a conversation I had with Jeff last week, and he was laying out the gap in the numbers, meaning how much we're really fighting over, and he had said to me, well, the owners have already said they'd play 82 games at a prorated salary. That's part of that March agreement, right? But I'm not sure that's what the owners did agree to, Jesse, did they? Because at the time of the March agreement, they probably weren't anticipating a return without fans. So it seems to me what the owners have been trying to do ever since then is find the right number of games in that environment to conduct baseball. And it's clear they don't think 82, by the way, is the number. They don't even think 70-something is the number because they're offering that at less than prorated salaries, right? So,
exactly right. Yep.
I don't know that they ever really considered an 82-game schedule with prorated salaries in the no-fans environment.
Yeah, it's really important to be able to have seen that agreement, which I did. And a lot is left to the imagination. There's one line in there, one line in this whole document that says we need to discuss, quote, the economic feasibility of playing without fans. It didn't even reference salaries. It just said that one little line. And then later on, there's a whole section about salaries, never mentioned playing without fans. But I got to push back on one thing. I think then you could have – look, they put it in the agreement, that line, right? So they had it on their mind. So why they didn't spell it out better? This is what will happen without fans. This is what will happen with fans. This is what we'll talk about if we don't know all the answers right now. We're going to talk about this in the coming weeks. Like, they didn't spell it out enough, and it really has caused a problem. One side thinks it's open for negotiation, the owners. The other side thinks it's a done deal. You're supposed to pay us a full prorated rate and play, quote, as many games as possible.
Hey, that's a fair point, Jesse. Is it a realistic request? Meaning, if I rewind this back to March, and I don't have the answer to this, I'm not trying to corner you. I'm genuinely curious in retrospect. Could they have known? I mean, I don't know what we... You know, this coronavirus thing, even coming from the World Health Organization and American authorities and everybody, it's just changed so many times on everything. I'm just curious, And it's changing now. It's changing right now. But I just don't know what the owners could have. And maybe the way to do that, to your point, would have been lay out, I don't know, dozens of different contingencies, dozens of different scenarios. I just don't know how we could have done anything forward-looking in March or April.
Yeah, I get you're not wrong. It's all about your perspective. I was one of those guys early on that I thought playing in front of fans would be a problem. But you're not wrong. Put us all back in March. Our attitudes, our feelings are different. But again, they thought enough to put that one line in. We'll discuss the economic feasibility of playing without fans. And so, and look, there are some agents, I truly believe, you hooked them up to a lie detector test, they'd say, yeah, their salaries were going to be an open question if we were playing without fans. Like the fact that they put that line in means that both parties were thinking of it, but it still left a lot to the imagination. And they just should have, these are contract lawyers. Like this is what they do for a living. They should have written it a little bit more definitive if they were going to play with fans and without fans. I understand we were in a different spot back then, but I think it was something predictable because they did put one line in there. So, look, we can go back and forth, but that agreement has set things back in this negotiation, in my opinion.
ESPN Major League Baseball reporter Jesse Rogers here on the Will Cain Show. I've really enjoyed these back and forths on this, and I'm afraid we're not done, Jesse. I appreciate it, man.
You got it. Anytime.
I will say Jesse's right. The players do have this negotiating tactic. They can take their ball and go home. But then that will be painted as a strike by the players if they choose not to play under, say, a 48 or 52 or minimum game proposal. Then it will be put on the players. And it is a real threat, though, because I don't think anybody, owner or players, want to deal with a 2020 season that is lost. That's real long-term damage to baseball. 888-729-3776. Let's return to the protest and your calls on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Will it be seen as a sign of complicity if NFL players don't kneel? That's coming up in just a little bit here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. But I want to go to the Shell Penzo Performance Line and hear from some of you. Russell in New York, what's up, man? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Will, I just wanted to say thank you for your time as an analyst, as somebody on air and different platforms. I'm 25. I'm African-American male. I first saw you on First Take and always felt like you didn't have enough time to get your point across. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But a lot of times it was like, hey, this guy has a good point. He just doesn't have enough time. And then found out you had your own show. And I was like, that's exactly what I needed. And I've been a fan of yours ever since. Because when you actually break down what you're saying, it all makes sense. Whether I agree or disagree, I get your point. And in terms of Black Lives Matter, like, you know, I'm 25 years old. Like, I think I'm part of the younger demographic of your fan base. But I do feel like it is a fight against social injustice as well as racism. And racism is a tricky one because it's faceless. You know, I can't look at you or anybody else as a white man or female and say you're racist just by looking at you. So it's tricky. And it's important that, like, I feel like white people should realize that when we are talking about these things and having these conversations, we're going to use the term white people, but we're talking about racist white people or white people who feel like they are in a place of power over lesser demographics. I have 2 points I just want to say really quickly. I was thinking about this from a logical standpoint. Outside of the emotions, I'm like, where do we go from here? What would be a possible solution? If I had the power, what would I implement? I think one is a long-term one, which would be black people are not in place or minorities are not in these places of power, whether it's due to lack of money or due to lack of the proper education. So I do feel like a long-term goal would be to put black people in better places of power, better places where we can make decisions. Because it's just, there's a conflict in interest of asking, white people to kind of help with a situation that they're not really living in. So not to say that they can't, but it's just it wouldn't be the same as a black person making those decisions. The short-term goal, and you tell me if this is too far-fetched, I haven't looked up the numbers yet, but I feel like in every major city that is heavily minority populated, I feel like every white cop should be paired with a cop of color. And you tell me if that's too far-fetched or not. I was just brainstorming, like, I wonder if that's a good possibility, but I don't know.
Okay, here are my responses. Russell, you can stay. You can stay on the line. Bubble just pot you down for a minute, but you can stay on the line. Couple of responses. Okay, number one. You said what Black Lives Matter means to you, a fight against racism and social injustice. Okay, I agree. That is a laudable goal. But we have to also agree with each other, just out of sense of realism, that that is, as you said, faceless. It's also amorphous. It doesn't mean it's wrong. And I think you're right. I think if you polled most people walking on the streets across this nation in protest, they would say something similar. But what I would say to that is, I actually don't think most people disagree. Like, if you polled the nation, even those who would say they don't stand with the protest or want to distinguish themselves from the riots or whatever we draw our lines on of disagreement, I don't think people much disagree that racism is bad. You know, and I think to reinforce it, that is probably what most people believe the goal is. Look at the fact that there are protests in Germany and England and France, because they don't have our shared history or our shared policies. So they're making a stand against racism writ large. And they do that, by the way, in Europe, and they have anti-racism campaigns in soccer. And what I would push on that is this. I think most people agree, but that's not a denial that racism exists. So how do you reconcile those two things? How do you reconcile that most people would say racism is bad, and yet your Russell or anyone else's experiences are real? If everyone believed that, then this wouldn't be the case. And it's because people don't live up to their actions or don't live up to their words. Their actions aren't real. They don't exist at all. And their words are fake. And that's my point. You see what I'm saying, man? Like, we have to be able to, this is a battle of the heart, largely. This is a battle of the individual. And so as people take to the streets and hold placards and make social media posts, my cynicism is, yeah, but what do you live like? You see, I mean, look, man, I'm not trying to hold myself out as perfect, far from it, but I do want to live in the reverse of that. I will be willing to put my life's actions and choices up for scrutiny, and I don't have much to say publicly, meaning social media posts or holding a placard or that kind of thing. And when it's writ large, that's what we allow this thing to get away with. Do you see what I'm saying? It's a laudable goal. And by the way, I don't think it's worthless, because I think you can change hearts and minds. I do think there is the possibility that this movement can persuade and influence individual hearts. But we'll return to our quiet corners. The social media posts will expire in people's timelines, and their actions will be left. As to your specific thing, Russell, and Bubba, you can bring them back up for a quick exchange on the back end. The black cops, white cops thing paired together. I don't like it, Russell. Now, here's why. I think we flatten things. We flatten it as though, as we said earlier, all black people have the same thoughts, or all racism is black and white. Ooh, that is a big mistake. That is a big mistake. You think all racism is between black people and white people? This country is very diverse, from people from all different places, and racism is not something exclusively the province of any ethnicity or any nationality. And what more, I don't know that the data, we always talk about the data of unarmed black men being killed, but we don't really, I mean, does the data show it's by white cops all the time? I'm not sure that's what the data supports. It's often by a black cop. I do think we need cops who connect to their community. I don't want to do group identity. I don't think it's right. I think it's all about the individual. So I'm not going to sit here and go, do we have this group represented in this community? I mean, to some extent, there'll be some overlap, I'm sure of that, but it's about being actually connected as individuals and human beings. Russell, I'll give you 30 seconds for a quick response.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I didn't actually look up the numbers. I was just brainstorming, like, logically, what would be a possible, like, if I had the power, what would I try? Because I feel like we're at a point where we need to try something, and whether it works or not is another thing, you know what I mean? I just feel like we're at a point now that, like, and it's sad that I have to say this, but, like, if this happens again, if another armless black man dies by the hands of a white cop again, racist or not, like, and nothing has been tried in this moment, I just feel like we're in this continual pattern of like, okay, there'll be a riot, there'll be a protest, we'll talk about it, and then things will die down again.
I'm with you on this.
While I respect the fact that you disagree with it, that was just kind of my like, well, let's try it.
And, well, I don't begrudge you, Russell. I got to go. I appreciate the call and the back and forth. I don't begrudge you continuing to search for, hey, what's a real tangible fix? That's where we have to go. 100% have to. I would just encourage two things. I would ask yourself always, like, you don't solve the idea of thinking of people as groups and not individuals by looking at people as groups and not individuals. You see what I'm saying? That's not going to work. So I would always ask myself, am I saying, you know, am I defining somebody by their skin color? Am I defining people by their groups? That's just not going to solve it. It's just going to spin the wheel forward on the same exact track it's on. But still look for solutions 100%. And I know for some people, like, what does that mean? It's not complicated in the end. Do we look at each other as individuals? Treat, and act as individuals. That's it. In the end, that's all it's going to come down to. I'll keep taking your calls. You have some more interesting people on the phone. Plus, let's talk about the trouble brewing in the UFC. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show.
This is Will Cain.
Look, one of two things is true. Either I'm a moron surrounded by geniuses.
Can't get enough Will Cain.
Or I'm a genius surrounded by morons.
Don't worry. More coming up.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
It's Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to hang out with ESPN's data analyst for the NBA, Andre Snellings, here on the Will Cain Show. Let me hear from a few of those really quick, from a few of you really quickly. Jack in Arizona. What's up, Jack? You're on the Will Cain Show.
It's Jack, homie. D-A-X, brother.
Oh, Dax, yeah, I recognize you from Twitter, but that's, but they wrote down Jack on the thing.
Yeah, that happens all the time, dog. Hey, man, I hate to hear that you're leaving. Wherever you're going, I'm following. You seem to be the only voice of reason down there, man. You know what I mean? You let people get their point across, and I appreciate that about you. The other thing is, I'm not real proud of this, bro, but unfortunately, I've had quite a bit of contact with the police. I've been sure, you know, over 100 times I've been arrested. And I got to say, man, 99% of those cops, bro, were good dudes, man. Every time I was in the back seat, they would ask me, hey, what's going on with you, man? You know, there's a better way. They were always trying to help me. You understand what I'm saying? So for people to lump all those cops in with that one cop that did that to that poor man, that's BS, bro. That's not a fact of life right there. And we're losing ground to a political statement that doesn't need to be made politically. You know what I'm saying? I just don't understand it, man. I mean, if we're gonna start lumping people in together, everybody that was out there, the so-called peaceful protesters, they're complicit in all of the rioting and all of the damage that was done because they stood and said nothing and did nothing, if that's the way we're going to be.
I get that point, Dax. I appreciate the call. I also appreciate the interactions you offer me online as well, man. Everything I've gathered from what you've said on air and online is that you got your life together. Hopefully you're not finding yourself in the backseat of any cop cars anymore. You make a really interesting logical point, which is for those that reject sort of the bad apple approach of law enforcement, all cops aren't bad, then that would mean that, to Dax's point, applies to the protesters as well. You don't want to be defined by the rioters, right? You don't want your point of view co-opted or distorted or defined by the rioters. So seems like the bad apple phenomenon would hit pretty close to home right there. Dave in Florida, you're on the Will Cain Show.
How you doing? Yes, sir. How you doing, Will?
I'm good. Thank you.
Man, I appreciate your call. And I just wanted to comment on the – you had a caller just a couple of seconds ago named Russell. He was a 25-year-old black man, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He made a point that is so – it's so simplistic, but it's so realistic that I believe that if you put a white officer and a black officer together on patrol, none of this would happen. I believe that idea was so that idea hit me so surreal, man. It was that it just sounded so smart, but so simplistic. I just want to know what you thought.
Well, Dave, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate Russell's search for solutions. The problem with that approach is it's defining us by our superficial differences. And I know they're not just superficial, it's background and culture and experience, but it's defining us by literally our skin color. How could it be that that's all there is to us? Is it possible a black cop and a white cop have two different sets of thoughts? Or what if they have the same set of thoughts? What if they have the same sins? What if they have the same virtues? Are they going to balance each other out just because they're black and white? What about the neighborhoods they grew up in? Did they both come from rich neighborhoods? Did one of them come from a poor neighborhood? It's just there's so many different factors in who a human being is. Why do we just assume that that one simplistic difference is the one that's going to balance everything out and make it right? I do think it's good to be around people in this world that are different than you. Yes, in skin color. Also, in income level, also in geography, also, don't let this blow your mind, but in thought process, ideological diversity. I just think we're not going to solve issues of racism by applying racist ideas to it. You see what I'm saying? We're not going to solve looking at each other through the lens of skin color by looking at each other through the lens of skin color. Really quickly, Jerry in New Jersey. What's up, Jerry? I don't have a ton of time, but I want to hear from you. What's up?
Will Kane, Jerry.
Hey, man, I remember you. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, what's up? Hey, listen, Will, I just want to say one thing, maybe a couple things, two, three things, but no, I'm not going to be long here. Thank you. I know you're leaving ESPN. I just wanted to say thank you, you know, for giving me a chance to talk about my Pittsburgh Steelers, because on a lot of other radio shows that I call into, I get denied. Time and time again, I get denied. And you gave me a chance. You gave me a chance to voice my opinion, to debate back and forth with you. And even though I still think I'd rather have Brucey from the longest yard over Dak Prescott, I respect you, Will Kane. And thank you for giving me a chance.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Jerry. I'm going to have to cut you off right there because I got a hard commercial break coming. If you want to hang on, I know you have a couple more points you want to make. We can hear from you in the third hour of the show. Coming up in just a moment, Andre Snelling is going to come in. We'll talk to him about the future of these movements and what represents real progress. That's coming up next on The Will Kane Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Thank you for listening to The Will Kane Podcast. You can listen to The Will Kane Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Kane Podcast.